gentlemen, the information you are about to hear is true. The names of the brokerage firms and financial institutions have been changed to protect me, your host. This is Central PA. Every day, investors are encouraged to commit imprudent activity. Typical financial planners outnumber investor coaches 500 to 1. Just the facts, ma'am. Every day I get on the radio, I'm in danger. There is always someone who doesn't want you to hear what I have to say. Being an investor coach is a thankless, glamorless, endless job that has to be done, and I'm damn glad to do it. And now for our strategic spotlight segment. We are back. Hey, this is Paul Nichols, the investor coach. I hope this finds you well this frigid Saturday morning. We are going to be focusing on our strategic spotlight segment this week's show with Imran Andrew, a friend of mine who is a wealth strategist and best-selling author. I've met Imran a few years back through his father, who had written a book, Misfortune 101 and Last Chance Millionaire, books that are on our reading list on our website and books that we promote, strategies that we promote. And Imran is one of the sharper guys that I've met, especially for his age. He's not a real young guy, but he's not a very old guy. And I really appreciate him coming on to share with us. And we're going to be talking about concepts and strategies from his book, Millionaire by 30, which is a bestseller. And it's really kind of the fourth book in a series that talks about misfortune and strategies and concepts that are a little contrarian, a little out of the box, a little different. We're going to be talking to Imran this morning. Imran, are you on?
I am. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thanks for getting up early. And
it's great.
I know you're out in Salt Lake, not in the lake specifically, but Salt Lake City. And we appreciate you coming on because we got a 2-hour time difference, right?
We do. I was already up. I've got a little boy that wakes me up around 7, so this is no problem at all.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, we're going to talk a lot about the book Millionaire by 30, which has been a great success. And I know that some of the strategies that your dad, Doug, has taught, and we've been out to Salt Lake on several occasions to talk about some of those strategies. This is kind of an extension of that, right, Millionaire by 30?
It is. You know, Millionaire by 30 was written, you know, as the fourth book in our series, really with me as a co-author as well as my brother. And we were, my brother and I and my father, we were really writing to our peers, a little bit younger demographic, and those who are just trying to get started versus those that already have something established, what to do with your money, but rather how to get started properly.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of people, especially younger folks, don't figure that they can really get started until, you know, they get out of school and then pay off all the loans and then start earning good income. And I think a lot of people are under the impression you really can't start till you get into your late 30s, you know, or 40s, much less being a millionaire by 30.
Absolutely. I mean, it's amazing how long, you know, people just keep on putting it off or procrastinate, yet you can take small little steps that... You know, the best asset that the young people have is time. And if you understand how money works, the biggest factor in money and growing wealth is time. It's not the money itself, it's time. If you can set a little away, that little bit grows way larger than waiting until you're in your 30s or 40s and you're trying to sock away now 5 to 10 times the amount of money just to catch up to what you could have put away while you were in your 20s.
Right. Time is on your side, right?
Absolutely.
Now, it's interesting. I'm reading from a page here off the Misfortune website, and it talks about Millionaire by 30, the quickest path to early financial independence. But what I notice here is that there are approximately 100 million people in America between the age of 16 and 30, which is
mind-boggling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, between 16 and 30, 16 and right in that age group there, I mean, there's just as many of people in that age group as there are as there are baby boomers. I mean, we talked, and Doug wrote, my father wrote Last Chance Millionaire because there are, you know, there's 70, 80 million baby boomers. But if you look at age 16, and I think it actually may go up to age 30, maybe closer to age 32, but yeah, there is about 100 million people in that age group.
And, you know, to put that in perspective for the listeners, Imran, that's a third of the U.S. population. I mean, that's a huge number of people when you think about it. I had no idea it was that big, 100 million. And you know what? We're not taught a lot of these principles in school. I know I wasn't. I don't think you were, right?
Absolutely. You know, and that's funny. That's one thing that we talk about in the book is that, you know, you go to school to learn all your skills and to learn these different talents, and yet nobody teaches you how to make money with these skills. Or once you do start making money, what to do with that money once you start making it, once you graduate from high school or college and start going out and making the money, what do you do with that money? What is the best thing to do?
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about you and Andrew, you and your brother, and of course your dad, but it's kind of a family affair that you guys have out there, and a lot of your siblings are involved in the business, and you guys do a lot of educating. And I'll tell you, I was really impressed when I had come out and met with you, and you had done some of the presentations, at how much you had learned from your father, predominantly, I would guess, right? Kind of sitting at his foot as you were growing up, because he's always been a financial strategist, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been very lucky to have a mentor and a hero in my father, and how, you know, he did allow us to learn from what he has learned over, you know, a 55 years. And it's amazing, and the way he did teach us. I mean, he let us struggle through things. He didn't just hand us everything. He let us, you know, he would teach us the concepts or teach us the principles, but then we had to go out and try to implement or try to struggle through them to learn for ourselves. And that that alone has been one of the most valuable experiences or valuable teaching lessons I've ever received.
And you know what's cool about it with the situation you guys have is you have so many advisors like myself and other guys from all over the country that are, most of them are top shelf guys. I mean, they have large practices. They've done very well. And you've been able to sharpen your edge against a lot of guys that come in and meet with you guys, because you teach these concepts, and because they're contrarian, you know, a lot of people are pushing back a little bit. So you've learned a lot because of that educational process. Talk a little bit about that just for a couple minutes, and we'll get into the nitty gritty. I wanted to really make the point of how knowledgeable you really are, Imran, and how much we respect the knowledge you've gained, not only personally, but from your dad, and how you guys really have taught hundreds of what most Americans would say would be the pinnacle of advisors in this country, strategies that just kind of knock the scales from their eyes, and they're like, whoa, you can't do that. Why can't you do that?
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the funnest parts of the business of what I do. I love teaching not only individuals on how to do this, but teaching professionals. And you're right, we do teach. We have a course where professionals come in and try and they learn what is it that we do. They, you know, they come in and learn these basic concepts, and so, you know, some of them aren't so basic. They go into detail and go depth into areas that nobody else ever goes into. And you know, we have trained, and I've trained over 2,500 of these professionals. Just got back from San Diego 2 weeks ago with a group of 20, and it is a lot of fun. It's one of the funnest things I do, is be able to sit down with all these other advisors, get some input from them, but then also have the opportunity to now take what I've been able to learn and to teach it to them. And that's been one of the, like I said, one of the funnest things I've done. And we do it in the form of, you know, I test them on it. I create tests, and I test them on it. I have a lot of fun with it, and it's been a wonderful journey, for sure.
You know what's interesting is when you go through some of that education, which I had gone through, you know, it really kind of points us in a different directions. Like, for example, and we can get into this, the IRA 401k dilemma. You know, so many advisors are taught tax deferral, tax deferral, tax deferral. They only focus on accumulation rather than the distribution of the estate. and, you know, when people come through the classes that you guys teach, a lot of guys want to argue at first. Wait a minute. It doesn't work that way.
It does. You know, it's very interesting because, you know, they all come in with their preconceptions of what they've been taught. And instead of looking at a specific investment, we go back to principles. I mean, if you base your finances on core principles and core concepts that don't change through time, I mean, these are things that have been around since the beginning of time. And if you understand the principles, then you can go through and start picking out the investments. You know, for example, you mentioned you know, the IRA 401k dilemma and how everybody's putting off taxes in their IRAs and 401ks. I mean, we always have the principle, you know, what are you putting this money aside for? For what? What part of your life, what period of your life are you putting this off for? If you're putting money off for later in life, for long term and for retirement, don't you want the retirement, the actual money you're going to be receiving in retirement, to be maximized? Not so much the money going in to be maximized, but the money coming out to be maximized. And so many times everybody makes this mistake where they use short-term investments for long-term objectives, and they use sometimes long-term investments for short-term objectives.
Right. And they don't consider the actual taxability of things. We just go with that mantra, tax deferral, tax deferral, tax deferral. But when you actually analyze it, especially for the younger people starting now, it's quite a different story than a lot of us have thought. You know, as advisors, we're taught to defer taxes, to encourage people to max out their IRAs and that type of thing. But when you really analyze it, boy, the proof's in the pudding when you look at what is actual net spendable income on the other end, right?
Absolutely. You know, we use a little metaphor. If you were a farmer and you went in the spring to go purchase your seed, what would you rather do? If you have the option, when you go to purchase your seed, would you rather pay taxes on the price of the seed and then have the ability to, when you go harvest your crop, you can enjoy that entire harvest completely tax-free, versus the route most people go down is when they go to purchase their seed, they try to save the tax on the price of the measly seed only to pay taxes on their entire harvest. You can structure it, and most people don't even realize they have this option. You can absolutely structure your retirement and your long-term savings to have the ability to pay the taxes now. I mean, we always ask the question, what do you think future tax rates are likely to be? Do you think they're going to be lower? Do you think they're going to be the same? Or do you think they're going to be higher? I've never had a single person not say they're going to be higher, and you can't deny that right now.
Right, especially.
I mean, the current administration says taxes are going to go up. We're going to raise taxes. That's, you know, you know it's going to go up. So why avoid the taxes now when we know down the road taxes are going to be higher? Why put it off and let your account grow to pay taxes on it at a higher rate because we know they're going to be higher?
Right. So why postpone paying taxes? Well, you know, what's interesting, Imran, is the fact that, you know, the IRA hasn't been around almost 30 years now, so not quite 30 years, right? I think it was 28 or some odd years that the IRA, actually the traditional IRA, has been around. So we're just seeing the effects of that, right? I mean, for many years,
yeah,
we never really knew what the effects were going to be. Because when you see the pitch, if you will, for lack of a better word, of the whole tax deferral concept, it makes sense when you look at it.
It does, you know, because you look at it and you want to make sure that you're not paying, and you don't want to go into a normal account that's taxes earned, like a CD or a money market account. That's like walking to your retirement. You know, IRAs and 401ks, I'm not saying IRAs and 401ks are bad, they're good. But, you know, we have we have a little ditty, you know, good, better, best. Good, better, best. You know, and we want to go from good to better to best.
Right.
And so an IRA or 401k isn't necessarily, I'm not necessarily saying they're bad, but there is something out there that's better. Once you've learned about IRAs and 401ks, don't stop learning. Go out there and see what else is out there that can actually outperform even an IRA or a 401k.
Yeah, it's kind of like shop around a little bit. You know, you made a statement to me, we were chatting for a few minutes yesterday, do not overpay the government. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because that ties right back into the book, right? You're trying to educate these younger folks. And by the way, a lot of older folks have really enjoyed that book too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've had a lot of, you know, we wrote it to our peers, but it's really to anybody who's getting started. And so, you know, even if you're in your 50s and 60s, I've had plenty of 50 and 60-year-olds pick it up and love it. One, for themselves, they get a lot out of it, but then also they hand it down to their children or grandchildren. But, you know, talking about that concept of overpaying your taxes. I mean, this is one thing that so many young people get into. When I mentioned earlier that, you know, you go to college to learn how to do a job, And then once you go out into the workforce, you get a job and you start making this money. Well, nobody ever tells you anything to do, how to do, what to do with that money. And one of the very first mistakes people make is when they fill out that W-4 for your taxes to tell your employer how much tax to withhold. And so many people don't have way too much taxes withheld. So at the end of the year, they get $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. I've even seen tax returns of $8,000 to $15,000 on an annual basis. Like every year, they're getting those type of tax returns. And you think that's free money? No, that's money. That's a tax-free loan you just gave to the government. For example, you know, and you can't even trust you're going to get it back these days now. We saw in California how the state of California is withholding those tax returns. It's your money, and they're not even going to give you back your tax return. It happens in Kansas, too. So, I mean, the one thing we want to do is take choice and control. You do not have to overpay your taxes if you don't want to. Now, the IRS makes it an extremely complicated formula to figure out what exemptions you should claim on that W-4. But in order to make that simple, we actually took those IRS formulas and we programmed them into a calculator online that your listeners can access if they would like to.
Okay, so just to recap this real quick, Imran, what we're talking about, folks, for those of you who may not be familiar with the W-4, is you can decide how many exemptions you want to take so that it tells your employer how much to pull out of your payroll. And obviously, if you have, you can take as many as you want or as less as you want. A lot of people will just say, okay, there's me, my wife, and three kids, so we'll take 5 exemptions. But I learned this at a very young age. I would take, like, I think the max, whatever the max was, I want to say 13 or 14 or something. But the more exemptions you take, the less they're going to withhold from your check. Now, I may end up paying at the end of the year, but what Imran's referring to is you don't want to take low amount of exemptions, end up having them take tax out of your paychecks all year long, and then you get a refund at the end of the year because it's like really giving them the money for a year, in essence, right? That's what you're saying, Imran.
Yeah, it is. You're giving the government a tax-free loan, which is interesting because if you end up owing at the end of the year, they end up usually charging you interest on what you should have paid and maybe even give you a penalty. Versus if you overpay, they don't pay you a dime of interest. They don't pay you a dime of a penalty. They just give it back. And like I said, even in California, they're not even giving it back at this point.
That's ridiculous.
But, go ahead.
It's ridiculous. You know, in fact, what's interesting about that is that, unfortunately, then what most people will do is take that refund and go buy something.
Yeah, no, I mean, they usually go out and just consume it.
Right.
Versus throughout the entire year, you could raise your paycheck by a couple $100 per paycheck, take that extra money, set it aside into a nice conservative liquid side fund earning compound interest, and you would imagine if you start that early enough in your 20s and 30s, what that accumulates to. It's amazing. You start setting aside that extra $100 a month that you're overpaying in taxes, and you discipline yourself to set that aside. I mean, if you waited until you were in your 40s or 45, you would have to sock away $1,000 a month instead of $100 a month just to catch up to what your account balance would be at age 65. How much easier is it to find $100 a month than it is to find $1,000 a month?
Well, and I think we just found $100 a month for a lot of people. They never even thought about it. Now, this calculator, there's a website they can go to. We're going to give them that website and then go to a break here. I don't know. We're trying to get it linked up on our website. I don't know if that got done yesterday, Imran, but is there a website?
Yeah, I'll give it to you here. And, you know, it's a really long website, so I'll give it over the air here, but it's probably too long to remember. So they probably ought to just go to your website, and shortly you can have a link up on that. Just keep on watching on your website.
Yeah, we'll have a link there at Financial Abundance, Inc. Yeah, go ahead. What is it?
Okay, so this will be on financialabundance.inc, but the URL is missedfortune, M-I-S-S-E-D, fortune 101.net/resource-center/exemption.html.
Yeah, I can see that. It is long.
I'll make sure that I get that emailed over to you, Paul, and then you can post that on your website, and your listeners can just go to your website and click a link to it.
Yeah, and folks, before we go to the break, the reason for this is so that you can go, and they've designed a really cool calculator that would allow you to just plug that in and determine what makes sense for you as far as taking exemptions, right, Imran?
Absolutely. It'll calculate the exact number of exemptions you should be claiming so that you don't overpay your taxes. This comes directly from the formula that we based this off of, came directly from the IRS.
Cool. With that being said, you're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach with It's Your Money, and we have a special guest who's calling in from Utah, Imran Andrew, and we're going to take a break and we'll be right back, and we're going to talk about debt and how to control the debt and what debt means, especially for that younger group of people, because we're talking about his book, Millionaire by 30. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. You're listening to It's Your Money, Saturday Morning Street Smarts, part of Coach's Corner. And I'm joined by a best-selling author and wealth strategist, Imran Andrew, someone I've known for a few years, a friend of mine. Imran, I'm looking at the cover of the book here, Millionaire by 30, The Quickest Path to Early Financial Independence. And I actually should give Aaron his a shout out, because Aaron was instrumental, obviously, your brother Aaron, for those that are listening here. Doug Andrew is the father, and then Imran and Aaron work with their dad. And both of these guys are sharp, sharp cookies, and always enjoy talking to you, Imran. And I appreciate you taking time to be on the show this morning. We're talking about the book, Millionaire by 30, which is a bestseller, which, man, I mean, that's probably a puffed up moment for you guys, huh?
It is. You know, thanks again for having me on. But it is. You know, I never, ever thought growing up I'd write a book.
Right.
You know, you don't grow up thinking you'll be an author or write a book. But it was one of the greatest, one of the funnest experiences to go through. And I think I'll go through it again. I enjoyed it. And it's a way to share. You know, my dad always says, you know, you can't capitalize an asset until you give it away. And it's a wonderful asset of all these different knowledge and experiences about money that I've learned from him growing up. The only way I could capitalize that is to give it away. And that's what we decided to do, is write this book and get it out there.
Well, you know, what's cool about it is not just writing a book, but having it become a bestseller.
I mean, yeah, that is definitely exciting. Yeah,
that's huge, man. Because a lot of people write books and they can't sell them, you know. But that's really cool. In fact, we're really talking about the book, A Millionaire by 30, and we wanted to really focus in this segment, Imran, on debt and the whole concept of that, because most of us are just not taught much about debt, except it's not good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody just sees debt, and the first thing that they think of as negative. I mean, debt is negative, and it can be negative, but it can also be positive. I mean, you need to understand it. You can definitely turn it around, just like a bank does. I mean, a bank takes debt. Whenever you make a deposit into a savings account, that goes on as a liability or a debt to the bank. You're lending the bank money, but the bank thrives on that. You lend them money, and they pay you 2 or 3%, or maybe right now, maybe it's like a half or a 1%,
right.
And they go out and loan it out at 4 or 5%, and they thrive on this type of a thing. And did you know you can do that even as an individual?
No, I didn't know that. Let's share that with people. How can they do that as an individual?
You know, we talk about a lot in Millionaire by 30 on the concept of pay yourself first. I mean, I think one of the first books that really talks about that in depth is The Richest Man in Babylon. And a lot of people have read that. And if you haven't, it's a wonderful financial book.
Is that Ogmandino? Ogmandino's book.
Yeah, by Ogmandino.
Great, great book. Great book. I read it many years ago.
Absolutely. And he talks about this concept of pay yourself first. Now, the challenge is you may not have really, that was a concept and a deal that made a lot of other people, all these millionaires he interviewed, that's what they said, is pay yourself first. Pay yourself before you pay everything else. And yet they didn't really explain maybe necessarily how. But in Millionaire by 30, we go through several different ways on how. And one is how you attack debt. I mean, the smartest way to attack debt is not necessarily to send a whole bunch of extra money towards the debt payment. You know, and that's really different from what most financial institutions teach, especially the banks, because the banks want your money. But if you have, I don't care if it's a mortgage, I don't care if it's a student loan. If you've got a student loan or a mortgage, instead of sending the extra principal payments or, you know, extra payments against that debt, the smarter thing, like it teaches in Richest Man in Babylon, is to pay yourself first. Take that extra money and set it aside into your account. Because if you do that, you'll be able to take advantage of one of the greatest miracles in money, and that's the miracle of compound interest. So if you set it aside, that extra $100 a month that you were paying against your student loan or against your mortgage, you set that aside into your own account earning compound interest. I can easily show you, when we show you a millionaire by 30, not earning high in the sky compound interest returns of 15-20%. You go with a very conservative interest rate, 6-8%, and you will pay off that debt faster, quicker, because you will have the money set aside accumulating, and it will grow to a bigger amount to pay off that debt faster than if you were just paying it directly to the creditor.
So to hit it from a different angle, what you're basically saying is, rather than paying extra payments to get the debt paid off, put the money into a side fund that's earning a rate of return, and you'll accrue enough money sooner to then, in turn, if you want to pay off the debt in full quicker.
Absolutely.
By using compound interest, which Einstein said is the eighth wonder of the world. You've heard that before, right?
It is. You know, it really is, because most people think, well, if I'm being charged 5-6% and I go out and earn 5-6%, I'm not going anywhere. That is wrong. I mean, if you're paying 5-6%, you're paying 5-6%. When you pay interest, you're paying simple interest. But when you invest, you're investing at compound interest. And so the very first year, you may pay exactly what you earned, but then the next year, you're going to earn interest on top of the interest. And as you let that keep on doing that every month, every year, that will just compound and grow. I mean, you take a dollar and you compound it with, you know, compounding interest. So you compound it and you double it. And so if you double that 20 times with compound interest, that dollar would grow to $1 million. And that's the power of compound interest.
So really what you're doing is, rather than paying the taxes on the money and then paying the debt off, you go ahead and take that money and put it away, and then you're earning interest on the principal, interest on the interest, and then interest on the tax savings as well. So that's how you really parlay that into a larger account, rather than paying the debt off. I think, you know, why is it that we do that, though? Emron, did you talk about that in the book? Did you study, where's this dynamic and where did it come from that says everybody pay off your debt, when all the wealthy people and corporations do just the opposite of that?
You know, I wish I could nail down the source, because if we could nail down the source, we could actually teach the source. And I don't know if the source are banks or just the general. I mean, you go to most advisors, and there's a lot of advisors out on the radio and on the TV that talk about, you know, get your debt paid off, get your credit cards paid off. And it's not so much that I disagree with it, I disagree with the method. There's a smarter way. You know, there's a good way to do it, and that may be sending the money directly to the creditor, just like your IRAs and 401ks. Those are good. But there's a better and a best way to go about it. And that's that whole concept of making sure you pay yourself first. I know you have to make your minimum payment. Pay that. Pay the minimum payment. But anything over and above the minimum payment, take that money and put it into yourself. Because, I mean, there's so many advisors out there that have these debt consolidation programs. And they all go and attack the debt with the highest interest rate. You know, that method isn't necessarily a bad method. And sometimes if you have a credit card at 20% interest rate or 30% interest rate, yeah, that is something that you probably should get rid of. I'm talking about typically right now, a credit card, if you haven't gotten behind on it, should be right around 7-10% right now. And even at 7%, you can go out in conservative investments and earn 5-7% right now. And I promise you, you will get ahead of the game. Give it to, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years down the road. You will have more money if you set that money, extra money, aside than if you would have just tried to put it directly to the creditor. And more importantly, you'll have liquidity. And liquidity, if you look in today's economy, is the number one problem of this financial, of the whole economic crisis. I don't care if you're in the mortgage industry, talking about mortgages or about homes or about financial institutions. I don't care if you're talking about the auto industry. The biggest problem is liquidity.
I would agree with you. And you know, if you made me think of something, student loans. I remember paying off my student loan and my wife's student loan with lump sums because I was doing really well, making a fair amount of money, and we just took big chunks of money and paid off those student loans. You know, I think about that. That was 1990. I think about that. If I'd have taken those lump sums and put them in an account and just kept paying that student loan bill, I imagine, you know, that's almost 20 years later. That account would be quite substantial by now. But I didn't understand these concepts 20 years ago. You know, it's interesting. And by the way, folks, for those of you out there listening to this, you got to realize that we're making general statements. You really need to get the book or call our office to get specifics because everybody's situation is going to be a little different. But we're talking about in general terms, pay yourself first, right, Imran, and put that money into a liquid side fund that has a rate of return and then go and deal with your debt long term. So, you know, you don't get a deduction from student loans, right?
You know, from the student loans, you don't get a deduction on the student loan itself, but if your income is below a certain amount, you know, you can actually deduct the interest on your student loans as long as you don't make too much money. If you're gone out and you're making, it's right around $100,000, so if you make more than $100,000, you may not be able to deduct that interest on your student loans, but if you make underneath that, just graduated from college, which most people do, the average income for a college grad is right around $37,000 a year, and so you can absolutely deduct the interest on the student loan. So even if you are paying 7%, it's not costing you 7% because you get to deduct that interest off of your taxes. That allows you to pay less in tax, and so it may only be costing you 5%. So now all you got to do is go out and earn 5% or more compound interest, and you're doing what every bank and credit union in this world does.
Yeah, and we can show you guys for those of you that are interested, call the office or go on the website or Miss Fortune website, and we can show you some of these strategies. You know what? Before we go to break, Imran, which is just a couple minutes, I'd like for you to address the renting versus buying for this younger group. What's your thought?
Absolutely. You know, and just to reiterate what Paul mentioned there, you know, we talk about all these concepts and whatnot. You really, you know, it's really difficult to go out and do this all on your own to understand all of it. That's why you still need a planner. So strongly recommend, you know, going out and still even calling up Paul and meeting with his office or find a good planner. And actually have a plan built for you. But talking about this rent versus buying, I mean, so many students, I don't care if you're in college even, we go through several scenarios in Millionaire by 30 of why do so many students rent versus buy in college? I mean, we can show you by using that exact same money you're spending in rent, turn around and buy, and by the time you graduate, you're going to have a lump sum of cash there for you. One of the greatest examples is my little sister and her brother, I mean, my little sister and my brother-in-law, her husband, are going to dental school in Iowa. And he says 90-something percent of the student body there in his dental class are all renting. And he knows exactly what they're renting. And he instead went out and bought a brand new townhome. And this brand new townhome was bigger than any of these other people, all of the other peers' apartments and their little condos that they're renting. It's bigger. It's brand new. And his mortgage payment is about a fourth, 25% less than what everybody else is paying in rent. And not only is that, he gets to deduct his mortgage payment from his taxes. So what my sister goes out and earns while they're working, while he's in school, she can deduct that from her income. And then when they graduate in four to eight years, depending on what he does there, that home over time, you know, real estate has depreciated right now, but over an eight-year period of time, there's never been an eight-year period of time in history where real estate did not slightly appreciate. So, I mean, even if they're able to sell it for what they bought it for, they still enjoy the tax savings the entire time, but over an eight-year period of time, it should and will appreciate. Even if it's only at 1% or 2% or 3%, they'll walk away with a whole lot of cash that they can now put right into he can invest right into a side fund or invest actually right into a practice to get his business started.
Well, that's a great nugget, renting versus owning. You know what? We got to take a top of the hour break. We're talking to a best-selling author and wealth strategist, Imran Andrew, and we'll be right back with It's Your Money following the break, where we're going to talk about equity and building a solid foundation. We'll be right back. Gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and foes, this is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. You're listening to It's Your Money, Saturday Morning Street Smarts, and I am joined by a best-selling author and wealth strategist, Imran Andrew. And we are talking about his book, Millionaire by 30. Imran, I just wanted to go back to something you had said earlier. Aaron had made a good point, and I was thinking about this when you were talking, but we had the break to go to. I'm curious, when you talk about renting versus owning for younger folks, perhaps that are going through college, how do they normally get into the house to start with? Because I know that's the question that's on most people's mind. You know, they may not have the down payment per se. Is there some strategies that you, or do you actually address that in the book?
You know, excellent question, and absolutely we do address them in the book. You know, to get qualified in these days and times, the qualifications are more strict these days, as well as making, you know, how do I find the down payment to get down? You know, with first-time home buyers, you've got a lot of advantages. You know, there's some tax perks that you get. If you're a first-time home buyer, as well as there's other strategies, you do have to, you know, never think just because I don't think I can get some, I don't think I have I can get the down payment. Don't just give up. Get creative, and you know, we show some creative ways in Millionaire by 30. For example, my little sister I just talked about before the break, how she bought their home in Iowa. They did not have a down payment, but they needed to come up with a 10% down payment. Because they were able to get a loan for 80% and then a second on that for 10% for a first-time home buyer, but they didn't have the 10% down. They needed that 10% down. So what they ended up doing, one strategy is they actually went into a joint venture with my brother, Aaron. And so what Aaron did is he went into a joint venture with them where they opened up a joint account where he deposited that 10% to 10-15% of the money in there, of the down payment. So he deposited the down payment in that joint account. It was co-owned by both parties. And, you know, they just wrote up a simple agreement where, you know, they take that money and they're going to use that as a down payment on the house. And so that's worth 10%. And so then when they go to sell it, in 4 to 8 years, like I said, whenever they go to sell it, whatever they sell it for, you know, 10% of whatever they get out of it, the equity that they were able to build into it, even if any, if there's no equity, then there's no equity. But if there is equity 4 to 8 years from now and they go to sell that house, the joint venture simply says Aaron owns 10% of that, 10% of whatever they sold it for. And so he would be able to get his money back, his down payment back, plus maybe some extra on there because hopefully the house has appreciated. But even if it hasn't, you know, even if it has depreciated, he still gets 10%. But that was the understanding. And so they found a family member that they could go into a joint venture with. You could maybe even drop a loan document. Instead of going into a joint venture, you could drop a loan where a family member, your parents or an aunt or an uncle, could loan you the down payment. Sometimes the banks and credit unions don't love that route, and so they would prefer like a joint venture route, but you can just see what does work. And so sometimes you have to get a little bit creative, but there's always a way to do that. I bought my very first home that I bought, 4 or 5 years, let's see here, it was about 5 years back now, and I didn't have a down payment. I didn't even have a credit score at that time. I had not had an ounce of money out on credit cards, car loans, or anything, so I didn't have a credit score, nor did I have a down payment. And so I didn't even use a normal mortgage. I went out and bought that house on a contract. So I bought it where the seller was my mortgage, my mortgage company. So the seller loaned me all of the money against it. Or you could do a lease option, a lease with an option to buy. So you get into the house and make some extra payments. You can make sure those extra payments go towards your down payments. So in a couple of years, you can refinance and all those extra payments now count as a down payment. There's so many ways to do it that you don't disqualify yourself. you know, you can get with a planner, get with somebody like Paul, or get into the book, and you can see there's so many different methods that you can do this with, so you can get started rather than waiting.
Well, you know, I was going to mention that. I was going to ask you, I'm glad you mentioned about your house, because I knew from conversations with Doug that you had gotten into your house without a down payment. And, you know, right now, there's a lot of opportunities to lease, own, to buy out there.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many houses out there that people are either trying to sell, and if they can't sell, they would be more than willing to do a lease option on it because they just need to be able to make sure that they can make their mortgage payment. And so it didn't draw up a lease option agreement. In fact, I think we have some lease option agreements in Millionaire by 30 where you can go to our website and you can download a lease option agreement and draft it up from there. But they're wonderful opportunities because you can get into a house without qualifying for a mortgage and without coming up with a down payment, and you have lease option that for a few years that you can build up, whether it's a credit score and or build up a down payment, so that in a year or 2 years you can exercise that option and buy that, turn around and buy the house, and all that money you've paid, or some of the money you've paid towards the person that you bought, the seller, can go towards a down payment.
You know, a lot of these strategies, folks, for you out there that are listening, are not pie in the sky, the stuff that we talk about. You know, there are ways to do it, you know, but you got to want to do it. You got to want to make some changes, have some paradigm shifts in your life, because look, you're not going to become financially independent by accident. It's going to take some effort, some education, some knowledge, and some advice and some help. I mean, the reason we go to mechanics, the reason we go to a plumber, the reason we go to a doctor is because they have a specialty. And it's the same with financial planning and wealth strategies. It's not a luxury anymore to get professional planning advice. It's really a necessity. And that's why we have folks like Imran, who's a wealth strategist, come on. You know, Imran, with a little bit of time we have in this segment here, I really want to focus on the concept of equity, because a lot of people just don't understand the concept of equity. You know, we teach it, we've been teaching it for years now about that. How does that apply to the younger crowd? Can you speak to that a little bit, equity in the younger crowd?
Absolutely. So if you do get into your first home, you know, as you get into that first home, you know, and you start towards paying that, getting that home ownership or paying that off, you will develop equity in two ways. Whether you're paying down your mortgage on an amortized loan, and so each year you may have bought the house for $200,000, but you know, you keep on paying that payment, and a lot of it goes to interest, some of it goes to principal, and it slowly pays that down. So at the end of the day, if your house doesn't even appreciate, you may only owe $150,000. The house may still be worth $200,000. You'll have $50,000 of equity. And what traditionally more or less happens is the house does slightly appreciate, and so your house may be worth, instead of in 10 years, instead of being worth $200,000, it may be worth $250,000-$300,000. So if it's worth $300,000 and you've simultaneously been paying it down, you can see there that difference between what you owe and what your home is worth is considered equity. Now, that equity is usually the most mismanaged asset for all Americans in America, and it's actually the greatest asset among all Americans. I mean, it comprises of more than 40% of America's net worth is in equity in their homes. Even with the real estate going down in value, that still is true today. And in fact, real estate might have gone down in value in some areas of 25% to 30%, but nowhere near the market. If you had your money in the market, that's gone down 65%, 55% to 65%. And so, you know, the equity, though, is the most mismanaged, because most people just leave it in the house. And if you leave it in the house, this is a concept most people don't get, and you'll need to get the book and read further into it to understand it. But equity earns a 0% return. You're not earning a dime of interest on your equity. And so it earns a 0% return, because that house is going to appreciate in value, or you're going to pay down your loan whether that house appreciates or not. I mean, it's going to appreciate regardless. And so that equity does not earn a rate of return. So what we talk about is how to safely, you know, the principles we teach for the last 30-plus years has always been liquidity, safety, rate of return. Now, how does liquidity, safety, and rate of return apply to equity? Because if you have your money is tied up in your house, it absolutely is not liquid. You can't go grab it in case you need it to pay some bills or to invest or to take advantage of an opportunity. You can't go get it unless you can go qualify, and it's a process that way. So it's definitely not liquid. safe. Talk about the people that have lost money in real estate. I mean, if your house was worth $200,000 and now it's only worth $150,000, if you had your money in the house in equity, you just lost $50,000. Versus it, like me, if I pull out all of my equity that I can, so I pulled out my money and my house goes down in value, did I lose any money? No, my money's already separated. I've got it in liquid cash over here, and so many people are afraid of owing more than what their house is worth. Well, that would be scary unless you had the money liquid sitting somewhere else. You could pay down the mortgage if you wanted to, but you only had to do that if you're trying to sell. Otherwise, keep it separated, let that money keep on growing and compound interest, and let the real ride out the real estate market, let it come back. I mean, it's the old adage, buy and hold. And so that's exactly what we talk about in Millionaire by 30, as well as when we talk about equity. What is the best thing to do with that money, that equity, once you start to develop it?
You know what's interesting, and I got to just throw this in here, because you'll have talking heads on the mainstream media or some of the radio or even books that talk about paying off your house, talk about getting out of debt, talk about not utilizing or understanding equity. And really, it's almost like a slap in the face, because what they're basically saying is, listen, Mr. America, Mr. and Mrs. America, you are not disciplined enough to understand how to manage your equity. That's really what they're saying, because whenever you crunch the numbers, equity has no rate of return. Now, in our area, Emron, it's interesting, we've had an increase in real estate values here in State College. We're in Happy Valley, right in the center of the state where Penn State University is. So the university creates kind of a bubble for us here. We haven't experienced nowhere near what other parts of the country have as it relates to the devaluation of homes. But, you know, a lot of these talking heads are out there saying, pay off your house, pay off your house, pay off your house. Either they don't understand, and that's the fact of the matter for most of them, they don't understand the concept of managing equity. But really, the people that they're dealing with are generally that smaller segment of people that just are not very disciplined or are not good stewards or have even attempted to manage their money, but they just blow it. Rather than most Americans, which are pretty good stewards of their money, they just haven't been taught about the concept of equity.
Absolutely. You know, it comes back to, do you want choice and control? If you as an individual want choice and control, you need to learn how to have choice and control, because most people, whether it's purposely or just inadvertently, they give all of the choice and control to the institution, to the banks, to the insurance companies, to the credit unions, to the mortgage companies. They're control the credit card companies. All of these institutions are controlling your life. You can turn that around and you can gain independence. And you can have choice and control. And that's exactly what we teach. Is the principles we teach are for those who want choice and control versus letting all these other institutions determine their financial future. You take over that choice and control. You learn how to pay yourself first. You learn how to have compound interest. You learn how to make your money tax-free. And then you learn how to take advantage of safe, positive leverage, liquidity, safety, rate of return.
And you know where we give up most of the control, Imran, is to the government, which is interesting. You know, that's where we give up most of the control, because we don't manage our taxes. And just to recap on what we've talked about here, for those people that may just be joining us, we're talking about the book Millionaire by 30 and how to really start off younger down the financial road to wealth or independence. And we talked about buying versus renting, thereby building up equity, managing the equity, at the same time creating a tax deduction that you wouldn't have by renting. So you keep more of your disposable income. You have a liquid side fund that's earning a rate of return if you need to get to some money. And really just starting to manage, not waiting till the education's over and you earn the bigger bucks. At least that's the plan, right, with the education. But to start right from day one. You know, I think about all the students. So I don't know how many we have here. What do you think there is, Aaron? Probably 50,000, 60,000 kids and young men and women that come in here every year to get an education, graduate and undergrads. And, you know, if some of these people would just start to manage some of their money, what a difference it would make in their lives long term. And that's what we're talking about here today, really. And that's really what the book's all about, right?
It is. You know, it is. If you start early, and it doesn't matter what age you're at, but if you start now, and if you start early, especially with all those college students, if they start now, you know, the biggest thing that we talked about at the very beginning of this was the time they have. You set aside a little bit of money, that little bit of money over 20, 30, 40 years, by the time you look at retirement, and I don't care if you're looking at early retirement or a normal retirement between 50 and 70, you know, you'll have that multi-million-dollar account built up. But it's not because you've set aside hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's because you've set aside right now the few dollars that compound and grow into those millions of dollars.
That's right. You know, with that being said, we're going to take a break and come back to our last segment with Imran. We really appreciate his taking a Saturday morning. How the time flies. You're listening to It's Your Money with the investor coach, Paul Nichols. For those of you joining us for the first time, welcome. Regular listeners, welcome back. 272-9700 if you'd like to join in the conversation. We're talking to Imran Andrew, best-selling author and wealth strategist who's been kind enough to get up early. I guess his son got him up pretty early, and he's out in Utah, the beautiful state of Utah, and has called in to join our conversation and talk about some strategies for the younger crowd. Millionaire by 30 is the name of the book, The Quickest Path to Early and Financial Independence. Imran had written this with his brother Aaron and his dad Doug, who, if you've listened to me, you know we promote Doug's stuff quite a bit. In fact, their books are on our reading list on our website. Imran, we're going to end off this last segment just kind of talking about where does somebody get started this younger? I mean, we were talking about building a foundation. And perhaps you can expand on that. Somebody who's listening to this, maybe they're going to Penn State, they're going to school, they're working hard, maybe they're working part-time. Where would they start?
Absolutely. You know, so many times when people start down the path of financial independence, they skip the most essential step, and that is the foundation step. They always want to jump into what's going to make them $1 million tomorrow, or what's going to earn 50-120% rates of returns. You know, and then they forget to establish that foundation. You've got to have a foundation, and that foundation has to be based on liquidity, safety, rate of return, and also implements compound interest. You know, tax favored as much as you can do, and tax favored growth and accumulate growth as well as access. And then lastly, safe positive leverage. And so, you know, that foundation has got to be established. If you've got an account that has that foundation, if you have go through these rocky times right now in the economics, I mean, you may know your parents or everybody knows somebody that has lost a significant amount of money right now with this recent economy. You know, what's interesting, though, is I don't have a single client that has lost any money with the investments or with the accounts that we choose, because our accounts all have that they're the foundation accounts. They all earn an average, 8% over time. This year we may not have earned anything, but I'll tell you what, all of my clients are, I was blown away that they were so more excited. They are all way more excited about earning 0% this year, or maybe 1%, 0 to 1% this year, than they were about earning 12%, 13%, and 15% for the last 3 years. I mean, they came in and they were happy. They earned 12% to 15% for the last 3 years in a row. But you know what? They could have gotten 12% and 13% and 15% in a lot of places. But now this year, everything else has tanked. Everybody else has lost 30% to 65%. And they've just stayed flat. And that's the power of making sure you've got somewhere where you're putting your money that's a good, sure foundation that has liquidity, safety, and a good rate, a predictable rate of return.
Well, what's the filter that they would go through to find out what's the best investment? I mean, obviously, we'll talk a little bit here in a few minutes about some resources that they can go to, and books and CDs, DVDs and webinars, this, that, and the other thing. We've got a plethora of information that we can get to people. But right now, how do they filter through and figure out what to do, Imran?
Absolutely. You know, in Millionaire by 30, we apply what we call a liquidity test, a safety test, and a rate of return test. And we actually do this to, say, 17 categories or 16, 17, 18 categories of investments in Millionaire by 30. We kind of do it with a risk-return paradigm. So we make a pyramid of all of the different investments that the categories of investments like mutual funds, joint ventures, real estate, life insurance, CDs, annuities. commodities, bonds, all that kind of stuff. So you just make a list of all those, and you apply this liquidity test. Which of these investments are liquid? What could I get to my money if I needed to? So if I needed to get to my money in order to make a bill or even to take advantage of an opportunity, an investment opportunity comes by that's a killer opportunity, and so many people have to pass those by because they don't have access to money where they could actually take advantage of that opportunity. And so you want to make sure you've got accessibility to the money in your foundation. Second of all, you know, you'd eliminate those investments that aren't safe. So the ones that have that are risky, you know, that have high volatility or that have high risk in them, you would eliminate those investments. And by the time you do that, you're going to get down to, you know, probably just a core group of maybe two or three or four investment opportunities or areas to invest in. And then the last, you know, then you apply the rate of return test. And after you do that, you're going to probably get rid of accounts like money markets and CDs and whatnot. And then the last test that we apply, because we usually end up with three alternatives, a good diversified mutual fund portfolio, annuities, and then properly structured maximum funded life insurance. And then the last thing we apply would be, okay, what we talked about here, the most thing that most people do is they don't think about taxes. So then we apply a tax test on these. And they actually, the one that passes better than any of the other ones is a properly structured maximum funded life insurance policy. It's not so much I want the life insurance, I want what I can do inside the life insurance. I don't care about the death benefit. I mean, I do. I want the death benefit. It comes along for the ride. But what I want is I want the money inside the life insurance policy because it grows tax-free. I can access it tax-free. And so, and if you know how to structure them properly, you can actually minimize the cost on those. So they're no more; they're actually cheaper than a typical managed mutual fund.
So basically, when you start to look at this investment matrix, if you will, you go through all these investments, and only a couple pop out at the bottom as it relates to the prerequisites being liquidity, safety, rate of return, and then tax advantages. Now, just to throw this thought out there, imagine a young man or woman who's 25 years old and they start putting money away for the next 30 or 40 years in a taxable account versus a tax-deferred account versus a tax-free account. And you look at the other end and you go, oh my goodness, man. I mean, I haven't crunched those numbers for 40 years, but I'd be interested. I don't know if you guys have done it. Have you ever crunched the numbers over 30 or 40 years in a taxable account versus a tax-free account and or even a tax-deferred account to see what the difference would be? It's got to be monstrous.
It is. It is. And, you know, the simple example is the example I used earlier. If you take a dollar and you double it 20 times, that's worth $1 million. Well, if you do that as a taxed as earned investment, like a CD, a savings account, or a money market account, if you do it as a taxed as earned, so every time it doubles, you have to pay taxes on the growth, that same $1 million after doubling it 20 times, that same $1 million will only be worth, because of taxes, will only be worth, depending on your tax bracket, if you're in a higher tax bracket, it's probably only going to be worth about $37,000. If you're in a low tax bracket, it might be worth as much as $60,000. You know, instead of $1 million, and that's the whole advantage of having it either tax deferred, or even better yet, let's have it be tax free. And so, you know, if it's tax deferred and you've got your $1 million in there, and if you go to pull the money out, you're going to have to pay taxes on everything, like in a typical IRA or 401k. Most people don't realize when they have an IRA or 401k, you actually have a partner. Your partner is Uncle Sam. He owns a portion of the money in your IRA or 401k. So many people look at it and they say, I have $1 million in my IRA or 401k. And I usually respond saying, no, you don't. You only have two-thirds of that. $650,000 of that belongs to you. $350,000 of that belongs to Uncle Sam, because as soon as you touch it, Uncle Sam's going to take about a third of that. And so you have that partnership. It's almost like you have a tax lien. It's not a real tax lien, but it's almost like that.
It is.
A tax lien.
Yeah, it's a permanent
IRA or 401k.
Yeah, it's absolutely a permanent tax lien as far as I'm concerned, because you're going to have to pay tax on it. You know, back to this insurance just for a moment. You know, we're big promoters of this and our strategies. as well as managing money in the market. We do all that. We're in both camps. But what's interesting is most people, especially in my area, I live in a more conservative area, Amron. I don't know if you've ever been out in central PA, but there's a lot of the Pennsylvania Dutch influence, a very conservative approach, which is probably very similar in your community because you have a lot of the Mormon community there, which is very fiscally conservative. So it's probably similar in that regard. And as a result of that, you have people that have a negative connotation to insurance. I don't know if it's like that in your community as much as it is here, but that's because they've never looked at it from an investment perspective. They've only looked at it as blood money. So they've structured it, for death, not for life.
Absolutely. I mean, most people think of the two biggest things that prevent people from saving money or putting away for investing is usually, interest that kills you, interest on your mortgage. So really, all that interest kills you. And the second thing is insurance premiums. But there's a way, again, to, if you educate yourself, how to make that mortgage, instead of your foe, turn it into your friend. Same thing with life insurance. You can turn around and make that your friend versus your foe. I mean, we've done things, our company has done everywhere from preaching back 30 years ago, buy term, invest the difference, or we've sold mutual funds. We went through this whole gamma and this whole experience of what is the best investment for our clients. And after 30 years of experience there, we have eliminated all these other investments. And what has happened, what has it been the best investment for all of our clients over 30 years? It all comes back to a properly structured, and I want to emphasize that, a properly structured. You've got to get together with an advisor that actually knows what he's doing. And most will profess they know what they're doing, but they really don't. Most advisors do not know how to do this. In fact, I would say less than 5% of advisors know how to do this. But it's a properly structured life insurance policy.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting. As I've learned over the years, counseling people and traveling around the country, around the world for that matter, talking about strategies, very few people understand this concept of maximum funded cash value life insurance. And you know what's ironic about it, Emron, and I'm sure you can attest to this, as I've gone around and talked to more people and studied this, you find an awful lot of wealthy people that have a boatload of their money in maximum funded life insurance. It's like a lot of people don't know about Walt Disney. He couldn't get anyone to give him money to start Disneyland. He wanted to start a clean amusement park, and he ended up taking $100,000 out of a whole life policy to start that. Henry Ford started Ford Motor Company with proceeds from cash value and life insurance policy. Have you found this to be true amongst people that really are in the know or get the top shelf advice and wealthy people? Where do you see where most really wealthy, and I know you guys have a lot of really wealthy clients, millionaires, some billionaire clients, where do you see them keeping most of their money?
Absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is, especially with the current economy, with everybody not knowing where to go, we have had just a huge influx of wealthy people giving us a call, whether they're in a lot of doctors, dentists, a lot of people thinking, where can I put, I'm making money, where do I put it? And we had, the wealthiest clients I've got, they always want to make sure that their foundation, and your foundation should represent anywhere from 40 to 75% of your net worth. I mean, the bigger the foundation, the harder it is to make you fall. And so these guys have got 40 to 75% of their net worth putting into these maximum funded life insurance policies because, they're going to grow 7 to 8% historically. They're going to be earning 7 to 8%, but the key is it's going to be tax-free. If you wanted that to be taxable, you're going to have to go out and try to earn 12%. And when you do that, you're going to incur more risk, which means you could risk your foundation. And so even more, and now more than ever, I'm having even just a huge influx of especially wealthy people wanting to take advantage of this vehicle.
Now, what's interesting now, for those of you out there listening, you might say, well, I'm not wealthy. Well, the only reason I brought this up was the fact that if wealthy people who understand money statistically more than most middle class people are putting their money in life insurance, and now there's a way to do that yourself through some equity strategies, and you want to go on the website and get some of these books, Millionaire by 30 or Misfortune 101 or Last Chance Millionaire, or just call the office and we can get you copies of this recording or other recordings we've done with Doug, is that, hey, the average average guy out there, the Joe Lunch Bucket, doesn't have to be the Joe Briefcase, but the Joe Lunch Bucket can also really start to utilize strategies that the wealthy have used, not for decades, but for centuries now. I mean, this is nothing new, right, Imran? This is not like all of a sudden, Doug had an epiphany and said, okay, I'm going to change the way we do business in this country. This is old hat stuff. It's just never been communicated.
Absolutely. You know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're trying to put in $1 million, $10 million into this or $25 a month. I started out with I didn't have any money to assets to transfer into one of these. I had a job, started making a little bit of money, and so I just started setting aside whether it was $25 a month or $100 a month or $250 a month. I could set that aside into one of these, what we call our buckets, and I put this away into my insurance bucket, and it's growing and compounding and accumulating, and it's liquid. It's growing tax-free. I can access it whenever I want. It's safe because as the market goes down, I don't lose anything. My money stays there. I don't have a negative rate of return. I'm safe from that. And then as the market goes up, I'm able to earn the interest rate immediately as the market recovers and increases.
Well, you know, with that being said, I can't believe this time has flown like it has with these segments. What can some people do, Imran, that are listening here that want to get educated, whether you're listening on the radio, we're going to make this into a CD and you may be listening to it in that regard. Where's some resources that they can go to...
You know what, Paul, I just wanted to thank you again for having me on. I've really enjoyed this. And for all of your listeners, I would be more than happy to gift them a copy of my book, a copy of mine and Aaron's, my dad's book, Millionaire by 30, with accompanying a DVD that really teaches it's about a 2.5-hour DVD that teaches a lot of these concepts, as well as an audio CD. And I'd be more than happy to gift those to those people listening right now. Otherwise, you can always log in. If you go to the website, there's a link on your website, or if you go to Missed Fortune, MISSED, fortune.com/DVD, you'll need to enter in Paul's promo code, and he can give that to you. Or if you want it for free, that will give you a $70 value. You can buy that for $19.95. That makes it so we don't make a dime on this. It just covers the cost of the book, the DVD, and the CD, as well as the shipping. And so you can do that for $19.95, but if you want to call up right now, I'd be more than happy to give them that whole package for free, and they just need to call 888-767-2346. Again, that's 888-767-2346, and let them know that you want to take advantage of the free offer, and they can do that.
Awesome. So basically, go to missfortune.com/DVD, and I have a code they can put in, EDI, that's Edward Delta Indian, and that way they'll know that it came from this radio show, and it'll make sure that they get that offer. Well, listen, missfortune.com/DVD, or you can just call the station 272-9700 or my office, and many of you know how to do that by going to the website. Listen, Imran, I know I can hear your son a little bit earlier on the break, so I'm sure you want to get back to him on this Saturday morning. Thanks so much for taking some of your morning to be with us. I really do appreciate it. Appreciate what you guys do and what you stand for, and especially you taking time to help educate folks here in Central PA.
The pleasure is all ours. Thank you so much for having me on.
Have a great weekend, Imran.
Thank you.
Hey, with that being said, you're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with our last segment. You once left a job, didn't you? And did you leave the money in that old retirement plan behind? Lots of people do this, but it's rarely a good idea. It's much smarter to move that money into an IRA. First, moving to an IRA gives you more control over your money. There's no company bureaucracy to worry about. Second, tax laws offer benefits to IRAs that you don't get with 401k plans. And third, with an IRA, you can invest your money virtually any way you want, instead of being stuck with a few choices offered by a typical company plan. And you can move your old retirement account to an IRA with no fees or taxes. So let us help you get the most out of your retirement savings. For a portfolio review and analysis, call us at Financial Abundance, 867-5745. Financial Abundance is a registered investment advisor. Again, it's 867-5745. Or go to our website, financialabundanceinc.com.